Blog Talk Radio.
Make your who agree with me. Don't put the name together now. Make your who agree with me. Make your who agree with me. Don't put the name together now. Make your who agree with me.
She's a wife,
mother, author, teacher, a researcher, none other than our own Huldah Dowie. Welcome back. It's been a long time.
Hello. Hello, and thank you for having me. I'm here.
Okay.
Awesome. Yeah. We're so glad to have you on. We know that you have a lot going on. You have a busy schedule. Thanks for fitting us in. And
anything for you two.
We can't wait to hear what you have going on and what's taking place in your life. But we want to jump right in because we know that you don't have a lot of time. And so we're just going to get started with some questions, if that's okay.
That's fine with me. Let's go.
Okay. So for those who may not know who you are, if they don't know, now they're about to know. We want to know, so some people who are listening, they are very new hearing the word Torah, let alone, you know, finding out, you know, their Hebraic origins or just finding out that there's something other than Christianity and such like that. But from you, we want to know, how did you hear of Torah? When did you come to the truth of Torah? Did you freak out when you first heard the name Torah? You know, like, tell us about, you know, how you began in this walk.
Okay. So since I've been in this walk, I think we've been a little over 5 years, I believe. And the further I get into this walk, the more the Father reveals the intricacies of how it even started. Because a lot of people just believe that they woke up one day and this truth was presented and then they just accepted it. What the Father is starting to show me is that, and I believe it's for everybody, if we do the amount of introspection that is necessary, he's beginning to show me the beginning. Because sometimes the end, obviously, like Scripture says, is declared out of the beginning. So he showed me where it started. Like, you know, when you jump into something in the middle, it's like, okay, I'm here, but let me know the fore story and let me know, you know, the after story. And I think in recent time, I've been privileged to be given more of the beginning. So I'll kind of start from the middle, and then I'll kind of work backwards, and then we'll kind of go forward, and I'll do it briefly. So for me, it came for me randomly. At the time, my husband was a Christian pastor. We'd been married under a year, and I pretty much just couldn't vibe with church. I'd been in church my whole life. I got baptized when I was 5. My family was in church. I mean, all I knew was church. And we were raised Baptist. And I came to him, and I told him that I didn't think I was a Christian anymore. And the look on his face was sheer horror. It was like, okay, not only is it a lot going on because we're married and people don't necessarily agree with it, but now you're telling me you're not a Christian anymore? And his response was like, what do you mean? And I was like, okay, I think I'm like a Jew. And he was like, no, Jews don't believe. And at the time, he said, Jesus. And he was like, so you don't believe in the Messiah anymore? I said, no, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying I don't think we're doing what we're supposed to be doing right. And he was like, no, don't say that. And I was like, okay, I'm a Jew for Jesus then. And he cracked up laughing. And he was just like, you know, maybe just frustrated, maybe just need to read more. And so it was in 2009 that the Father led me to do my very, very first Hebrew word study, and it was the word shekah, which is the word for worship. And that's when I learned for myself, and I didn't even share with anybody else, but I have it written down in a notebook, and I keep it, I go back to it a lot. That's when I learned that there's really only one word in Hebrew for worship, and whenever you worship something else or do it towards something else, that you're taking it away from the Father. So that was my initial introduction. And so that kind of sat dormant, but I kept studying. Like, my husband thought that I was just kind of, like, bored of regular church. So he's like, oh, maybe she's ready for some of this deeper Christian stuff. So he gave me Watchman Nee books and Oswald Chambers and Charles Spurgeon, and I was just, like, blowing through them. I was like, I couldn't get enough. I was like, okay, so this is deeper. I got this, right? And but it was still just Christianity. So I was reading Carolyn Mahady and Beth Campbell Moore, whatever I could get my hands on, and I still felt like it left me, I don't want to say empty, but I remember reading a book by Carolyn Mahady, and I can't give you the title of it right now. I wish I could. And I remember reading an all H2 double hockey stick breaking loose in my life. Like, it freaked me out a little bit. And I was like, why would I read a book and then, like, it seemed like everything might fall apart? Now, the information in the book, I think, is still relative, even probably now in my walk. And I remember looking at the book one day in my trunk, like, I will never read this book again. If this is the kind of upset it, you know, it would cause.
Wow.
It was maybe a year later. Maybe about a year later or more. And I didn't really bring it up to Marvin again. I just was like, you know, trying to cope with what the Most High was giving me. So I went through this whole phase where I was like, okay, we don't have to live according to the law. Because that's where I mean, that's where my mind first went. I'm like, we're lawless. And I was like, but maybe, you know, like Paul said, you're free from the law. Like, yeah, we have sin, but we can't dwell in our sin. So we need to do things we're good anymore. But we, you know, I was totally confused. And so how Marvin's son came over, that's Mario Chiavo, for those of you know by the name. And he brought a video. And the guy was talking about there's a letter J and the Hebrew and this and this. And we watched it all the way through. It was about an hour. And when it stopped, I said, run that back one more time. And we watched it again all the way through. And at that moment, everything changed. So for me, I know a lot of people have like a rocky start, you know, transitioning. But for me, it was like a no turning back thing. I didn't fully understand everything. I didn't really understand what walking in Torah meant, but at that moment I knew that this is what I was supposed to be doing. So that was to that end. So in reverse, though, what the Father began to show me was the reason why I had that pull, and I've had pulls at different parts of my life, was because it was always there. And I probably share this probably, it's on the back of the book, Hidden in Plain Sight, and on the back of probably every book about my Malagasy Hebrew connection. And an aunt of mine, she just passed 2 weeks ago. She's 104. In the fifth grade, we had to do a project for class, and they said you need to cook a dish that's, you know, a part of your culture. And so I went home to my mom, and I was like, I'm black. I don't have a culture. What are we going to do? And my mom immediately got me in the car. She took me to my aunt, who at that time was like 80-something.
Wow.
She was an old wife at her funeral. We all laughed. I told people she had been old my whole life. When I was born, she was old. She took me to her house, and she told me to never, ever, ever say that I don't know where I come from. And then she told me, she said, our people come from Madagascar. We were taken on a Dutch slave ship to Holland, and then from Holland we were brought to America. And for some reason, as a 10-year-old, that stuck with me, and I couldn't shake it. And mind you, everyone in my family knows this. I thought I was just like had some privileged information. Everyone in my family has been told this, and I was the only one who was like, okay, she's telling the truth, you know. It just stuck with me. It didn't come back up probably until I got back in college. And people go, well, no, black people know where they come from. And I would just raise my hand and say, well, I do. And, you know, I would share. And it would, people would go, wow, that's interesting. You know, it was going passing. And then when I was about 15, though, I had a dream. And the Father showed me a dream of writing on a wall in a cave. And it looked like it was in, like, hieroglyphs is what I would have described it as then. But it looked like how the Native Americans would write with, like little deer and stuff on the wall. And I kept looking at it. And I got to a place in the cave in my dream. And this was at 15, I think that was. And I remember holding up a light, and I couldn't read what was on the wall. But when I illuminated it, everything around it was, like, gibberish. And then it said Jeremiah 3:14. And so I hadn't read my Bible all the way through yet. I didn't even know there was a book of Jeremiah in the Bible, mind you. So I got up and I opened the Bible, get Jeremiah 3:14. It was like, I'll give you the past, stuck to your heart, we'll teach you and feed you, like, you know, blah. I'm like, oh, okay. So I was like, okay, that means I need to get really deep into, you know, church. And so I was like, oh, feeding the homeless and going on mission trips, like into neighborhoods and just all this stuff. And it wasn't until like maybe 2 years ago when I was, maybe 3 years ago, when I was really, really getting deep and trying to understand Hebrew language, and I was praying, and I was like, okay, Father, it's a heart, my heart desire is alignment with you, and I want the language. Like, why won't you help me? Like, I'm trying. And his response to me was, you already know it. And I was just like, yeah, okay. So now I'm crazy. And like, maybe a few days later, he reminded me of that dream. And he's like, remember what you couldn't read on the wall? And when you illuminated it with the light, you could read it. It was never in English. It was always in Hebrew, but you were able to read it. Like, you have it, you have to uncover it. And it made all of those things that I just shared just all make sense. So that's how I end up here. So for me, every step is like sometimes like stepping in the fog, you know, but once you step a little bit further in the fog, the area around you. And
wow,
that's just kind of how it's been for me.
That is amazing. So I can't even imagine, right? Because my husband David and I, it's been maybe about 10 years now, and he was kind of the first one for us who would say, like, I think we should start keeping the Sabbath. And I would be like, I don't know about that, you know. Like, he was just like a week or so before, and I would be like, well, I have to study it out for myself, you know, trying to be all prideful. And then I would study it out, trying to be all prideful, and then I'd be like, oh, okay, so there's no reason why.
Don't get around this, right?
Right? And then he'd be like, you know, because we would go and have lobster pizza at Red Lobster or something. And then, or, you know, we're Southern. And so, you know, bacon and pork is like a staple. And he was like, I think we got to stop eating bacon. And see, now, I've been dieting most of my life, and bacon was always in the diet. It didn't matter.
Regardless, honey, bacon had to stay, huh?
That was your protein, right? And so I was like, oh, no, I got to read for myself, and let me see. And then I read it. I was like, okay, well, I guess you're right. I mean, you know, if Yah says it, you got to do it. Like, I'm grateful that he has given me that heart to just, you know, follow, because a lot of times it's hard for people to hear and then follow. And like you were saying, Hulda, that it's not like you go to sleep and wake up, you know, not for everybody anyway, like, oh, okay, I got it, everything's great thing, when you have to dig and research for yourself and get your own convictions and get your own relationship going with the Father.
Yes.
Exactly, yes. Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, now we know, like we said, that your time is short. So now what we want to do is get into your books. You know, we want you to tell us about your books. Start by telling us a little bit about your first one, Humble by His Presence. And then
okay,
we can get, you know, and get into the other two. I'm excited to hear about those.
Okay, so Humble by His Presence was kind of, it was like a heart book. It was from my heart. It was like one of those things where put something out there so it's real for other people. Like, this isn't a static walk. This is not a walk of rules, but it's a walk of growth. And I know there were so many people who didn't understand why or couldn't make connection of how or what. And so instead of going into all of the logistics, it was a book of, okay, if we don't understand anything, even if you're Christian and no matter your denomination, most people's desire, who are really, really seeking him, no matter where they begin, their desire is to seek his heart. And so in order to do that, though, you have to be put on a particular path or frequency in order to feel it or find it or see if you're even in the right area. And so that's kind of where that came from. It was like kind of some of my thoughts from my perspective, but giving concrete definition to some of those Hebraic words that just don't make sense to people. and they can't see them unless they're put into a context that's familiar for them. So that's kind of where that came from, and it's still one of my, like, one of those things, like, I'm like, oh, if you want to get to know me, maybe that's what you should pick up, you know, because, you know, everything else is kind of in a different direction.
You're so right about that, because I read a book, and please, listeners, if you haven't got a chance to read the book, to buy the book, it's Humbled by His Presence by Huda Dawid. You can get it on Amazon, and if there's another place they can get it, let know. But I read the book, and you are so right, because I felt like it's a devotional. And so
yes,
I felt like every morning, if we could, we would meet somewhere for coffee, my girls, and just, like, get together and share our hearts. Like, that's just how I felt. It was really it's comforting and intimate with, like, you know, like your bestie or your, you know, your sisters or, you know, just your girl. And so I really, really appreciated and still appreciate that book. It's a very soothing read. And so I encourage everyone to get it, because it's something that you can read over and over again.
Yeah.
And in that book, I know one, there's all of it is pretty just, you know, incredible. But I know the one thing that keeps sticking out is the, could have been day 14. It has a four in it somewhere. I don't have my book because I'm packing, but it talks about when Hebrews get married. Do you remember that one?
You said, I have mine in here. You said day 14, you think?
I might. It might be.
Yeah,
be.
I know exactly which one you're talking about. I don't.
I know it has 14 in it.
Or it's Know His Ways or something like that. I think it's a chapter. Know His Ways or Learn His Ways. Learn His Ways.
I love that, because people today, the question is, I guess, is will you in the future talk a little bit more just about that as a subject? Because people today really think that you can really have those values. It's almost like Christian Torah keepers, like, oh, you know, it's all about the bride. It's, you
yeah.
know, and not really do with the groom. And that just stuck out to me, because there is, I mean, we're to be set apart in every way. And there is even a Hebraic way to get married and to have, you know, that kind of order in that. Can you touch on a little bit of that and then let us know? Because we also need to mention that you have a YouTube channel, and we want you to tell everybody that, and you have all kinds of awesome things. I have any questions in so little time, but tell us a little bit about that part of your research.
So learning these ways kind of stem for me from a couple of areas. When I stopped being angry about not knowing about this walk, a lot of humility came after that, because that's kind of just how the Father works. He gives you time to be a brat, kind of like we do with our children. And then
yeah.
it's like, okay, now the brat phase is over. Let me deal with you. You know, that's
yeah.
enough. Stop crying. Let's talk about it. And that kind of, that was kind of where that came from. And so when I was dealing with people who were still, I don't even like to deal in the sense of just, like, Christianity, but people who were still rejecting the Father's way. Because I don't care what group you're in, you can be rejecting the Father's way. You can be in this walk
mm-hmm.
and rejecting the Father's way. I'm starting to see people kind of, it's kind of black and white. Either you're following or you're not. Your group doesn't matter. One of the things he showed me was that especially for people who believe in the Hamashiach, and who are not keeping Torah, one of the things he told me is, like, there are some people who really, really have a heart for me.
And I'm like, okay, I'm listening, you know? Mm-hmm. And he said, instead of telling them how much they don't love me by not keeping my commandments, how about you tap into how much they do love me? It's like Marika at the time. And I didn't have Olga at the time. I was just regular Marika. And he's like, you can't determine whether or not somebody loves me. And you always deal with everything from a negative. He said, why don't you deal with it from a positive? How about draw people on their level of love for me and not on how much they don't love me?
Mm.
I said, okay. And so Learn His Ways was based on how much do you love a person. And you'll never get a young woman who's betrothed or engaged to a man. And if you got her and you said, hey, I know you love this guy, you know, but really you don't love him, you would immediately lose all credibility in her book, because in her mind, she loves him more than anything, and she's going to marry him, and she's going to be all these wonderful things to him, right? But if you switch that and say, you know, I'm kind of privy to some information that you don't have, and I want to share it with you because I want your relationship with him to be successful, then she's all ears, and she's like, okay, what you got?
Mm-hmm.
And if I said, oh, he likes this, and he doesn't like this, and you know, his favorite thing is this. And, you know, girls do it all the time. As women, you know, you have a girlfriend and she's like probably best friends with your crush. And you're like, ooh, tell me everything you know about him. Like,
right.
Do you like this kind of girl? Who was he talking to at school? You know, like
girls
do that. And it was almost like that. It was like you have to make them want more. If you're privy to information about the scriptures and about the Father, then you can get people to listen. And so Learn His Ways was like that whole thing, like, okay, you believe you're the bride of Christ. So as a bride, how are you preparing yourself for the groom? And it was like, you know, do you know what he likes to eat? Do you know what he, you know, doesn't like to eat? Do you know how he likes his woman to dress? You know how he likes his woman to dress? And it's like, as a woman, women can relate to that. They're like, yeah, you got a point there, you know?
Right.
When you put into those terms, then it's like, oh, okay, yeah, I need to go look that up. And that's how that came to be. It was like, no, play on their love, not on their disdain.
Nice.
Okay, now, you know, I was going to ask a question, you know, about being Hebrew, but I want to get into the book Hidden in Plain Sight, because it has to do with the question about being Hebrew. You know, do you think balance in the world is off because Israel hardly knows who they are and how important this is? And I know in that book, I mean, you go into great detail. So,
well,
you know.
Well, thank you. I was like, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. I also want to say, don't rush too much. I don't want us to rush. We can take our time, but I'll just have to keep checking. Like, if I go silent for a second, I'm just being a mom and a wife, making sure nobody's dead.
That's a good thing.
It's the truth. And my husband, I'm like, why is Ari using the mixer? She's not supposed to use the mixer.
Oh,
why is she not? He's like, but she said she could. I'm like, she's three. Like, no, she can't. She absolutely can't. Oh my goodness. Okay, so Hidden in Plain Sight, how that came to be, and I'll be, I guess, talking about a book within a book. I started writing a book called Israel's Brilliance, which is still a book that's coming, and I'm just trying to be released from another project that I started, which is on its way. Started as a book called Israel's Brilliance. And, you know, in our culture, in our Western culture, we're taught to fear a lot of things. And so, and we always ascribe our greatness to other people, and we never trace things back to it, to their origin. And so I started with Israel's Brilliance to deal with this idea of meditation and this idea of quantum thinking and who is the creator and what his actual essence is and how he's revealed to us now. Different people, you know, understand in different ways. And what was primitive religion, and was everything about primitive religion bad? And, you know, this whole idea of stones, and do we use them? And what was the ephod? And what was really happening in the garden? So I'm like, I was all into this, like submerged in it. Like my whole life was all this. Like I was carrying on a binder and just like shoving it full of stuff. like just like writing notes. I'd be at work and I'd be jotting stuff down on sticky pads and sticking it onto my computer, like a real Sherlock Holmes crazy chick. And I started writing it, and I got about 70 or 80 pages in. And the father, I started writing, and everything I started writing seemed to not be about what I was writing about. I was like, okay, I'm not going to keep fighting this because this is getting really frustrating. Like, I have a goal to this, and it's not where this is going. And the father broke in and was like, how are you going to give away your family's secrets without telling the people who they are? So it's just for everybody, or is it for Israel? Yeah, you got a point there. So draw it back in, and then you need to first identify my people, and then you give them their brilliance, which is their light. And identify them, and then give them the light. And I was like, oh, okay, I see where this is going. So what were intended to be chapters of Israel's brilliance, which would have been explaining who the people were in passing, like people already knew, ended up being taken out of there, and it was like 40 pages, and started hidden in plain sight. And so sometimes, and I'm learning more about kind of, not necessarily how scripture was written, but how our experience as a people, as it's documented in the Bible, was not done in a vacuum. And it was the experiences within the culture around us that shaped the things that were revealed in scripture. And so I say that because while I was writing Hidden in Plain Sight, we were spending Sukkot in a predominantly Caucasian, possibly grafted in, jury's still out on that, environment.
And we know it well.
Okay. And so I was spending it in this environment where I felt like a stranger in my own culture. But at the same time, if I was going to share this information, it was in that environment, it would have to be done with truth, but also with sensitivity to the environment that I was in. And so as I'm writing the book in this environment and having very, lots of frustrating moments within the environment, the father was just like, write it as if you were talking in this environment where if you said something probably even now it wouldn't even be accepted. So while I'm in this environment, I was asked to do the beginning Hebrew class to teach it. And, you know, as a person of color, who these people, they have hidden bias. It was the first day they had somebody else do it. And I was like, for me, you know, I do my own thing, so I don't care. That's the part of humility that the father, teaches, is that, you know, every moment is not your moment. So I'm like, okay, I didn't push the issue. I got coffee that morning, and we hung out, and I didn't mention anything about it. So the next day, can you teach the class? And I'm like, okay. So I came, and I got there on time, and I was just sitting in, the third seat. And there was another gentleman who was there. He was, a more over congregation, and he was also a non-melanated visage. And he just started writing on the board, teaching the class.
Oh.
And so, you know, I'm like, okay. So I was like, maybe he doesn't know. And so one of the ladies in the front turned to me, and she's like, oh, you know, he's just doing this until our teacher comes. And I go, well, I am she, you know. And everybody's like, okay. So what started off with two people ended up 15 people because everybody wants to see a little black girl teaching them. And it ended up with the person who ran the facility and that teacher, and then another person who actually the Hebrew teacher's been to Israel, and then all of the little people who wanted to be there at that 8 o'clock session sitting there and hearing about the Hebrew language. And when that happened, the father showed me something. He said, it's not what you say, it's how you say it. And it's not what you do, but how you do it. And those who accept it will accept it, and those who reject it will reject it. And my sheep hear my voice. Okay. All right. So then I started writing this book, and I was literally in the end phases of it. And I was literally, like, getting my crummy internet that you get out in the middle of nowhere and sending, you know, pages to my editor. And that's how a lot of the first part was birthed. Like, I rewrote that whole first section. And Yah gave me the whole, you need to deal with racism. Because people don't think they're racist, but they really are. Like, you need to really deal with that, because until your mind is illuminated that we all have bias and that there is a quote-unquote religious bias within even Torah, you have to put it in there. And that part was birthed from within there, because my goal was to have that book finished by the end of Sukkot, which didn't happen, of course. It was definitely would have been tainted by, you know, other experiences that happened while we were there. But that's where that came from. And so he got to show me both sides, which is his heart for those who are grafted in, because you encounter those people when you're in a setting like that. And also his disdain for those who have no heart towards his people. And that's kind of where Hidden in Plain Sight came from. So I tackled a bunch of stuff. I tackled stuff for our people as well. The whole idea of who can be in, you know, the idea of, you know, people being non-messianic, which is to me absolutely is absolute heresy, because the whole, from the inception of scripture, there is a Messiah. And so we tackled those subjects and try to bring it all around to give a concise, educational, academic, open-hearted idea of what this work was. And it's gone a long way, so I'll kind of show that. So before I even got a good edited copy, I was like, I'm taking this and I'm giving it to Lauryn Hill. And
yeah.
So my husband was like, yeah, go for it. And so that's another story for another day. But I ended up taking a copy. She signed my copy, which I have, and I gave her a physical copy. And it has gone further since then. After I got it to her, I was able to be in contact with a professional basketball player who many people probably know, but I won't mention his name just in case you don't. And
okay, but I'm gonna call you later so you can find out. No, I'm just kidding.
Okay, go ahead. Yeah, definitely do. And sent him a copy to him and his family. And I've met a professor from Temple University who has been on my bumper, and I love him to death for it. He lives in New York, who is very big in the Hebrew community at large, and has been pushing the book and me and everything else. So that it's been one of those things that I know it's working. I have had heartbreak behind it too. I shared a copy with a very close friend of ours in our house, and we stayed in his house. Many of you know him. And he actually reviewed Humbled by His Presence. And when he got this book, I haven't heard back from him since. Sometimes it divides and sometimes it gathers. I don't think it's the end, but I think sometimes it's a hard pill to swallow for people who are stuck in some places. So for him, for those of you who know him, pray for him. And even if you don't, do so as well, because it's a very conflicting subject, but it's the truth. The truth.
You know, I was saying this weekend, and I was saying it the last show we had too, but what we all have to realize is Satan and all his minions, the adversaries with an S, they are always going to try to beat truth to the punch. Like, they're always going to try to throw their lie out there first so that everyone will believe it as truth. So when the truth comes, people will think the truth is a lie and get angry at it. And here's the thing. There has been a vicious lie that was told, and my heart goes out to everybody almost, because we're all, not all, but most of us are the victim of it. Like, you have those who, you know, grew up thinking that they were one thing, Jewish, for example. And then it would be like finding out they were adopted after their parents had died and they don't have anybody to talk to about it. They just inherited this, you know, culture that is just basically what they're told. And then we have those who lost completely everything, lost their language, their heritage, culture, I mean, their land, everything.
Mm-hmm.
All because of lie. All because of this lie that affects us both. Amongst even
exactly.
the people who give billions of dollars thinking, oh, I'm helping Israel, I'm giving because I'll be blessed. Those who bless them will be blessed. They've been duped too. And so instead of being angry, I've encouraged people to do the research. Instead of being upset that this truth is coming out, prove it wrong or, you know, research it basically so you can know for yourself, so we can live in truth, so that we can embrace each other. Because it doesn't mean that just because it isn't what we thought that we can't love each other, that people can't be grafted in. The original branches have to be regrafted in according to scripture. So
right, true. Okay, well, hold that thought right there, Shannon. We're going to take a quick break right quick, and then we're going to come right back and continue on that subject, okay? So I'm going to ask you ladies, if you can, to mute yourselves. Because the last time I muted everybody, I messed stuff up. So we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Over here.
You know what? And I wanted to jump in on what you were saying, Shannon, how, you know, people get, you know, lied to the fact where you have a lot of Hebrews who don't want to even admit that they're Hebrews because they don't have an understanding. you know, and you try to tell, well, you know, you're a Hebrew Israelite, you do it the best way you can, you know. And, like, I'm explaining it to my family, and they're finally getting it. Well, the young ones got it. It's just that the older ones, you know, are still, you know. But my brother, my oldest brother, he finally caught on because it's some guy, I don't know who he is, was telling them about Yahuwah and all that. And he was like, oh, man, my sister be talking about that. So,
This is something that isn't going away. It's not like a craze. It's actual truth.
No.
And Huldah has done an excellent job. And for our, the listeners out there, she is the one who helped me kind of get it. Because I kind of know how that is. You know something for so long. It's almost like finding out that Christmas is wrong, you know, or Easter. We're not supposed to be celebrating the Easter and Christmas and all that. It's kind of like, what? Really? Are you
right?
Are you sure? And then so you to find out, because years ago, my aunt, Gloria, said that we were Igbo, and or Igbo, however, it depends on who you want to. But this was years before I even realized. And, you know, I would hear, oh, well, you know, they say that they are Hebrews, you know, not even with the connection. And then I hear this information and I doubt it too. I'm like, what? You know, because you come into this information and it's like, but no, because I go to a Messianic Jewish congregation and I'm supposed to look to them because they're the. And then you start, when you start doing the research, just do the research. Start doing the research, and you're like, Balfour Declaration, what? And then you're like, Hitler even knew? What? You know, you're just kind of, all these things are just kind of like mind-boggling because we accept for truth just what the news might say or, you know, just passed down from generation to generation of, you know, slave owners even. So it's just interesting. And, you know I've been hurt personally by people who are, you know, they're your friend until you mention, you know, I'm a Hebrew. Well, what does it matter? I mean, it doesn't really matter. You know, Paul talks about vain genealogies, and I'm like, okay, so, you know,
can I just say something about that really fast?
Yes,
just in
yes,
case
do.
Somebody's listening.
Do.
So, you know, if everybody started looking at their genealogies, at some point we would all find a common ancestor. Right. And so I believe from my study, what Paul is saying is now don't sit around and try to like get in when you're already in. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
You know how you meet a friend and you like become like family and like everybody considers you family and your family becomes part of the family. Like that would be like that friend and saying, "Ooh, I'm just going to just go on this wild goose hunt, crazy chase to see if we're really related." And it's like, why? We are. Like, don't trip. The same thing. Not saying to disregard the fact that you were actually accepted into a family and that this family actually exists, but it's like you don't even have to go through all of that to get in. Like, you're in. Like, don't trip.
Exactly, because I was getting that too, just sort of like, okay, because it's obvious. We know that there are many genealogies in Scripture and in Torah. So we know that it's not, you know, I think the translation might be a little bit slanted, but it's more like, don't worry about where you came from because you're grafted into Israel now. So it don't matter, you know, don't try and.
Don't be stressing, don't trip.
Right. You don't have to worry about you being something else in our family. It's sort of like what you're saying, Huldah. And then that's like, you're it, you know. we're all together, you're in, you're part of the family, we don't have to do all that. But it's not saying, it doesn't really matter. You shouldn't try and see if you're a Hebrew or that you have a culture. Or, I mean, I think most people don't understand that black is not a culture. Black is not a continent. I mean, black is a color, you know? So
it's a crayon. It's a crayon. It's a,
so I don't think people understand that we are learning about ourselves, and
right.
It's not okay for anybody to expect us to be quiet. It's not okay for someone to act like I can't be excited or intrigued or want to know. It's like finding a long lost relative. It's like, where have you been and what were you doing and how did you grow up? And this, you want to know everything.
But
so,
what you're experiencing is what they, what you're experiencing is what they've done with everything else that we have.
Yeah.
Anytime there is an exceptionalism within the so-called black community, it's always stifled. Why are you bragging? Why do you have to rub it in? Why do you have to? Okay,
right.
So when you score a touchdown, you can't dance. You know what I mean? You can slam the ball, but don't hang on the rim. Like, you overdo everything. Why can't it just be, and why can't you just shut up? But nobody else has done that way. Why? Because if we get excited, guess what happens? Everybody else gets excited. And if everybody else gets excited, the jig is up. It's up. So you be quiet and hold your little peace and go in your little corner, and you'll be just a little person in our congregation that just found their little roots. But don't you dare get excited, because we see what happens when you get excited. At a football game, it could change the game. You could have a team who is a C-class team with a little bit of heart and can beat the national champions. It's just what we do. We will stir up same thing in everyone around us if we do it.
Now, would
you
say that's connected? Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, because you figure, okay, for years, you know, I've always known people would talk about, like you said, the black culture. And like I would always say, there's no such thing. We don't have a culture. That's before I knew, okay? Now, my baby, just turned 41 yesterday, okay? And 2009, I found out I had a culture. You know, so it's being excited about it and trying to, you know, tell everybody, not trying to step on nobody's toes. Well, for a while, I did kind of tiptoe. I don't tiptoe anymore. You know, I tell you, you don't like it, oh, well. You know, but, you know, all those years, I'm saying that because all those years, I never knew I had a culture until then. You know, it had to wait till my children were grown with children of their own, you know. So, yeah, I'm excited. And I'm going to tell people about it. You know, I'm not going to be Huffy and Puffy, but I'm not going to wear kid gloves anymore either.
Yeah.
Right.
So, Hulda, what do you say to those who say it doesn't matter? And to those who get angry even at the thought?
You know what? Kind of interesting. I heard your question. I know before that was a little bit along the lines of, because I was like, I anticipated it a little bit. But is there a connection between that excitement and how it excites everybody else? Was that kind of where you were going?
I don't know, but answer it anyway.
Okay. No, because you were saying, I felt like you're saying, was there some kind of connection? And I believe that that is it. You have to constantly silence the lion. Because if the lion roars, the whole jungle's going to pay attention. Mm. And so I do believe that. And I believe that when people don't want to hear it, and I'm really careful now, and it's interesting, on how I share it, because I believe that there are, that we all in our circles of influence, and some of us in larger circles or smaller, we are the people that people are going to hear it from. And a person has to first come to me first. So I don't share it if a person doesn't ask. And it's hard a lot of the time.
What do you mean?
But it always,
if they don't ask directly, like, are you a Hebrew? What do you mean?
No, I just don't. I, like, for instance, if I'm like in your space and, you know, if a person goes, well, you know, like, I don't have Bible conversations with people, pretty much hardly ever, unless it, like, is initiated by that person. And okay. So a person has to go, so what do you think? And I'll, my first answer is, you know, I don't know. You know, I give them the, you have to want it. Because I feel like the position of a person who doesn't have this information has to be humility on both parts, on my part and on theirs. And so I don't like to get baited into conversations because a friend of ours, the person I mentioned, may not even want to talk to us ever again. He shared this concept of watering soil. And if you water soil that doesn't have seed in it, which is obviously the word, then you curse it. And so I'm very, very careful of pouring Torah or water on soil that has no seed in it. And so you have to first prove to me that the Father has sent you, because I don't have time to waste my time. And I'm not going to argue with you about something. Now, it's different once you get a conversation. First of all, you have to show me that, you know, I'm cool with that. Okay. But I'm not going to, you know, oh, you shouldn't be eating this. Or do you know that you're a nope. Nope, because if I tell you, then immediately once I've told you, you're accountable. And it could potentially harden your heart. You know, I live in the country, and we get a lot of water, you know, during the winter. And then it gets really, really hot, and the ground literally turns to, like, cement. And you can harden a person's heart. And so I'm really careful with that. I just really, 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 really am. At this point in my walk, and in the climate that we live in, I just try to be mindful and meet the divine appointments that Yah sets in my path. But I never go after those that I want anymore. You know, the people, like, I want my family to know, and I want my family is whoever Yah sends to me and accepts this truth. Mm. And everybody else is kind of, you know, you'll catch it on the way out, I guess.
So what what really quick with that, what do you do? Because this is really good advice for me and all of our listeners as well, because you know, it's almost like when you first come into Torah, you want everybody to know and everybody to believe and understand it and get it and start walking in the way. And with this, it's the same thing. You know, I don't want to bash it over. But what about when you are in an environment where it is culturally diverse? Well, sort of.
Right. Yeah, I know what you mean.
Like, for me, I know sometimes I struggle. Like, I know that I struggle with Judaism and putting rabbis on pedestals. But there are times where, you know, even old congregations we used to go to, it's all about the Levites and it's all about the, you know, the Jews that, you know, who have been doing everything for years and we should follow their example. And, you know, then everybody's popping out of the woodwork, getting DNA tests, you know, wanting to be Jewish, you know. And so what do you say to those people who are in those environments that have to, you know, they hear that type of speech? Do you just sit there and, you know, are quiet? Or, you know, when they mention things like, oh, well, you know, Israel became a nation in 1948. Or do you just,
you know,
like, go ahead.
You know, cool, and this is the interesting thing. Zionism and white supremacy go hand in hand. I'll just flat out say that. But you have different groups of people. And I'm always leery of the direction that people go. Are you a Zionist or are you just relating to the Hebrew people? Because you'll find that the people who just want to relate to the Hebrew people don't care who they are. But when you have Zionists, it's because of a underlying white supremacist thing. Because Zionists and people who go towards Zionists or Ashkenazim, they understand that these people look like them. And so they're getting tested against people that look like them to prove that because they look a certain way that they're attached to a certain people. You see what I mean? Where a true person, that's not what you're looking for. You're going to look for the people that closest identify to Scripture, and then you're going to look for them. but you're still looking at a slant. And so what I've found, and I know people who live in Israel who are not a part of, like, you know, Dimona. I know just regular people of color who live in Israel, and they'll tell you that the people who are not Zionists and the people who actually really, like, believe that all colored people, you know, and people from literally the four corners of the earth are attached to this people and they've just been scattered, have a very differing opinion than those who have been influenced by either German or the Ashkenazim region and the Western world compared to those people who have come out of, let's say, Yemen or other areas where it's life, you know, where color doesn't matter. Where we try to pretend like it does in America, but it really does. There are some places really where color doesn't matter. And so it depends. When I get around people who are like, oh, I've found that I have the Cohen gene, and I'm like, dude, they test you against people from Germany and Russia. All y'all got the Cohen gene.
Right.
But what I found out just recently is that that test also tests five different areas. So that Cohen gene is all those Jews who came from the Caucasus area. But then they also test literally for the tribe of Levi that they don't tell you. And none of them fit in that category. And then they test for those people who have mtDNA on the E1B1A and the E1A1A or something like that. They test all that. So those people who fit the Cohen gene is a gene that they put on that ingenious test that matches you with people with Ashkenazim. But there are four other levels that they fail at that most colored people would excel in and test in, but we don't have $1,500 to take a test.
Right. Wow. So, and so, go ahead.
But you know,
all the time I just ignore it. I do. I just go, you know, that's interesting. I just kind of like smile and nod, and then I would tell them, well, what would you think if you know, other people also were, you know, related? Is it only white Germans? Or is it like, can there be colored Germans who could get the Cohen gene? Like, because I know that's where they're not going. It's like, oh, yeah, I'm this. And I'm like, well, so it's just all people from Germany and Russia? What about the 10 tribes that dispersed before and the ones that went into different areas, the one that married Canaanites, and, you know, what about those people?
Yeah.
And
that's
always like, so weird. They go like the weird, like, then they'll tell you, what difference does it make?
They always want to say, what difference does it make? But that's like with the whole Lipa tribe. We know what they are.
Right.
And so that's what now when a lot of people of color here take their DNA test, that's that they're tested against them because they know that they're true Hebrews, you know, from the tribe of
Levi.
Yeah,
right? Yeah.
And
they're
see, what
real,
happens.
So.
What
and
happens,
Judah and Levi,
right,
they got the same mother and father. So, you know, their DNA is going to be close. So when they test.
So, what is.
Yeah.
What has been happening, and I've just recently found this out, and I'll share with you guys probably personally more than I'll probably share here. But I've been doing a lot of research, obviously, because I have some markers, and so I've been following them. And one of the things that's been happening is when anytime a group of people rise up and have a literal claim to being the dispersed or the scattered children of Israel, the Beit Din, right, which is the Israeli court of rabbis, is then commissioned to go to this area and either and have them convert to Judaism. And so why you get a lot of these tribes who have an authentic way of living, but in order to legitimize the Ashkenazim, you need more people to keep these Ashkenazim man-made traditions. And so they go into these communities, and then they teach this to them so that when people come and then connect back with, let's say, the Limba tribe or the Bantu or the Yoruba or the Igbo people, they're going to get a form of Judaism and not the pure practice that they had before the Beit Din took jurisdiction over that particular area. One of the interesting things that I saw happen with my particular group of people in Madagascar is when the Beit Din or Beit Din came into Madagascar, when they found these royals and these tribes who were saying that they were the original people, they told them that we will not convert because we believe that this is who we really are, and they had to participate in something called a shavua, right? It's a return, not a conversion. And so a lot of people don't understand the difference, but these people had pretty much were like, nope, you can just take your fight bean and go back to New York because we're not saying that we're a part of you. We're just returning back to our original culture. So for anybody that's listening who has thought about going that particular route, make sure you are doing a shavua, right, a return, and not a conversion into something that has nothing to do with you.
There are other tribes that are in Africa, like in Ghana and Nigeria, that are doing the same thing. They're saying, no, we're not Jewish, we're Hebrew. Yep, there are a lot of people waking up. Yeah.
Now,
so,
I don't want any listeners to get things misunderstood. We're not talking against Jewish people. What we're doing is talking about who the Hebrew people are and some truths about the one of the biggest lies that were ever told. So, you know, we all, I'm sure, have Jewish people that we know and love and our family.
Yeah.
However, the truth must be told. We also don't aren't with, you know, only people of color, only black people are Hebrews or, you know.
No, I don't. No, we don't believe that.
I want to
touch on that just a little bit. So
yes.
One of the things that I tell people all the time is that humility brings sensitivity. And it's not making you insensitive to your own people, but it's sensitive to people who are a part of the conspiracy. Because the same way that we feel angry and hurt and lost and plenty of other things when we came into this, the same thing is going to happen on the other end of the spectrum.
Yeah.
Because there are children who are raised in this culture who are following Torah, who are doing these things, and the very speaking of their quote-unquote illegitimacy tears away a part of who they are, which is not what this is supposed to do.
Right.
That's not the purpose. The purpose is identifying those who have been rejected from even having a portion of their own inheritance for someone else. You know, it's like if you're at home and you feed, you know, you have children and you've fed the neighbor's kids and you didn't have enough for your own. Kind of what's happened in the quote-unquote so-called Negro or black community. Everybody else has eaten off of the remnant, and we haven't had a chance to even partake of our own inheritance and our own gifts and our own abilities and our own culture. So they have more than enough to share. So that's something that definitely needs to be brought out. And anyone who is able to accept and understand who Yah's people are, whether they're Jewish or not, and are willing to support the forward motion of the revelation of that truth, then I'm not against them. I don't care what you believe before you came and understood this truth. So that we have to be sensitive to that, of course. But just like we had to let go of traditions of men that we picked up in Christianity and other places, those same Jews have to let go of the tradition of man they picked up as Ashkenazim to fully follow Torah. So it's both, it's on two different ends of the spectrum, but with the same end goal in mind. So I want to keep that in the forefront of people's minds, where we have to be, it's not to the exclusion of anybody ever, but it's always to the restoration and the inclusion of those who have always been.
So why do you think that this information is important? Why do you think finding out who we are is important? Is it really that important? Is it important for mankind? Is it important for prophecy? Is it important to bring balance? What do you think?
Okay, I was going to say, when you answer that, go ahead and answer the question, because, you know, we've heard you say, you know, we're not lost, we're just scattered, but some scripture says, Yahushua came for the lost sheep of the house of Israel. Explain that after you answer her question, because I think it goes hand in hand.
Yeah.
Okay. So If you have Hidden in Plain Sight, the tag on the front of the book says, and all of creation waits for the revelation of the sons of Yah. So I'm going to go with all of the above to answer your question, because it's so many things that are in balance because of it, right? No one will ever be able to reach solidarity or peace with there being an imbalance. So me and Maury have this conversation a lot, and my analogy is always this. So say, for instance, you came to a house, and you walked in the house, and somebody else lived there. And they were really, really nice, though, and you met them, and you're like, hey, you know, I'm Hulda. And they're like, my name is David. And I'm like, oh, wow, that's awesome. And you start meeting, you're talking, and he's showing you around this house. And I'm like, oh, man, this house, something about this house feels familiar. And he's like, really? It does. Wow, that's interesting. And so sit down, you have dinner with this person. And as you have dinner, the guy's like, you know, I really appreciate your spirit. Something about your spirit is just really, really beautiful. And I want to share what this home and some money or some things with you. And you're like, oh, really? Wow. And so you get to stay in this house, and the person gives you, like, a stipend for living there, and you're like, wow, this is awesome. This person is so nice, and they're so benevolent, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then, but every time you go around this house, like, something in your mind keeps going, I've been here before. I've been here before. Something about this house is familiar, and I've been here before. So then you go to the person, David, with, you know, and you go, David, is there something more to this? You know, you're helping me out, and you know, you're really nice, and yeah, he's like, this house feels familiar. And he goes, really? Ah, surprising you say that. I don't know. You know, and then one day you wake up, and you're sleeping in the bed, and you wake up from a dream, and you go, I got it. This house is a house that I've probably lived in before. So you go do some research, ask some relatives, and all of a sudden you find out that the house that you're staying in, that David is living in, is actually your home. And somebody actually left the home to you, and this person is pretty much like giving you breadcrumbs off of what somebody left to you. You'd be pissed. So it creates an imbalance.
Oh, my goodness. You're so right. Okay.
It creates an imbalance. And so imagine that particular story, right? But put it in the context of literally Yah gave the Hebrew people and is the children of Israel the dominion to be the light of the world, the salt of the earth. And he gave everything to their disposal to complete that particular task. And then somebody came along because they somehow forgot or were too young to remember, and then kind of started spoon-feeding them little portions of what they were. And every time they asked, or we asked, you know, this doesn't make sense. Is there any connection? No, don't read that. Don't think that's you. You're a Gentile. Just get these little crumbs and go about your way and be happy with it. You know what I mean? And so it creates an imbalance because the people, like me in that story with David, are not operating in their proper position. Right?
Right.
And so it creates an imbalance. So everything is imbalanced because of this imbalance, because if we were operating our proper role, there would be no abuse of resources, right? And it's funny because the Jewish people have a thing called tikkun olam, I think is what they call it, where it's like bringing healing to the whole world. And it's like, yeah, you can try, but until you restore the sons of Yah, we're going to be in a constant state of decay because our people – will never be right, and then it will continue to add to Yah wrath and vengeance for the treating of his people. So it has to restore so that we can all be restored, because charity starts at home. Yah can't fix anyone else before he first fixes us. So everybody else is waiting in line. Everybody's like, why is all these things happening? And why? Because nobody wants to restore Yah's people. And so, yes, there will still be black-on-black crime and white-on-black crime and police-on-black crime and black crime-on-police and all these things, because you don't see Jew-on-Jew crime. You don't see Jew-on-police crime. Why? Because there's a certain level of care you take over your own person when you know that you're just a little bit special to
yeah.
And so it's important. It's so important. If you want to see people not sagging, if you want to see people not getting cussed out, if you want to see people not getting murdered and old ladies not getting their purses snatched and prisons not being filled up to the brim, then restoration has to happen because the imbalance is decaying and killing everyone, not just the black people.
Yep. Agreed.
Yeah. That's good. That's good. Yeah.
Oh,
now,
okay.
Now
so,
Go ahead. I was just going to speak on the being scattered and not lost.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So vantage point, of course. Something that's lost is only lost to, how can I put this, is only lost to a person that's not looking for it.
Okay.
So to the father, nothing is lost, right? And
correct.
When you know who you are, nobody's lost either. But when you're not searching for something, it'll always be lost. Even when you're searching for something, this is going to sound kind of like way out there. But even when you lose something, right, and you're looking for it, in your brain, it's not lost. It's just like, oh, it's just misplaced. And I know what it is, and I know where it is, kind of finger on it, right? That's completely different from lost in the English sense of just being completely forgotten. And Yah forgets nothing. So we need to stop defining lost as forgotten and lost as in out of its proper place. Because that's why something is lost. It's out of its proper place of where everybody would normally identify it.
Yeah,
right.
Okay, so,
definition. Right.
There's a difference. Nothing is lost to Yah in the sense of I can't remember where it is. No, it's out of its proper place. Go and restore these who are out of their proper place in Asia Minor and in Turkey and in Rome. Restore them to their proper place by identifying to them, one, what they've been waiting for, and two, why they're so far away from home. You know, that makes sense.
That totally makes sense because you read the scriptures or the Brit Hadashah, the newer accounts or testament, and, you know, for the Son of Man came to seek and save that which was lost is what it says. But if you, I came for the lost sheep, of Israel or what have you. And so that is excellent. What you just said, I came to seek and save those that were, what did you say? How did you say it? Misplaced? Or
displaced, not in
displaced.
Your proper place.
Yeah.
Not in your proper place because they're,
yeah.
All right.
And restore them to their rightful place. Yeah, that's awesome. That's a good way to put it. Because that's another thing. We think we're getting rid of our Western mindset, but sometimes we're still stuck there.
Yep.
So we have to continue to work to get all that stuff out. It took us a long time to get to where we are, so it's going to take a while to get all that nonsense out.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
All right,
that's excellent. Yeah.
So, Marika, can you tell us about your YouTube channel?
Okay.
I'm sorry, real quick. I'm sorry to interrupt you. I know on your YouTube channel you had started teaching Hebrew, but has
and then
that
I stopped.
Okay.
Well,
I don't want to
stopped,
say it,
but
so I'm
I'll,
glad
I'll
you
deal,
did.
I'll deal with that
no.
too.
All right.
I'll deal with that too. Okay, so YouTube channel is Her Royal Roots, and where it came from was it wasn't supposed to be like my royal roots. It was like her, like all of hers, like all of us in conjunction. And so it was because early in my walk in, in organized religion, I always had an issue with the fact that men got to know all of the Bible and women only got to know pieces of it. And so I've taken on the humble and probably gruesome task of allowing women to know Torah so that, one, they can defend themselves against the wiles of the devil that come up in various religious organizations, but at the same time that they can understand they have a purpose in Yah's plan. Because just like any other imbalance, you can restore the people and cause an imbalance within the family and jack up the whole thing. And I believe we're currently living in a time where the men are being restored, but the women are like, you know, I don't know, extras in the show. And it doesn't work like that. We had a balanced culture of people where it was both patriarchal and matriarchal. Hard for men with a Western mind to understand. And when you have been raised Western, and in the sense of a lot of Hebrew men, with a slave mentality, what you'll begin to do is perpetuate the curses of your forefathers or your teachers, who happen to be some of the most rogue individuals on the planet, a.k.a. slave owners. So a lot of women are being treated like slaves within their own home. And so while I wouldn't call myself a feminist by the modern standard of a feminist, I am all for women, just like it's okay for men to be all for men. I'm all for the women, and I'm all for the restoration of their homes in whatever fashion that's supposed to look like, just like the brothers are riding for the brothers. So that's where that came from. And the reason why I took a break from the Hebrew is because the book I'm working on now, that will be, if Yah is willing, done by the 20th of March, which is a crunch time goal, but it has to be done, will help with that portion. And then after I finish that, I'm actually, Yah showed me something, and I knew it intellectually, but I didn't make it heart knowledge, and that is, in order to learn the Hebrew language, you have to do so as a child. And so approaching it as an adult is a big no-no. Approaching anything in Scripture as an adult is a big no-no.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been teaching my 5-year-old, and she's catching it like wildfire, and I still see adults who are struggling.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, because you're trying to learn it like you want it all right now. Like you're trying to eat the whole meal and drink your juice and have dessert right now. And it's like, no, you need to learn it like she's learning it. And so I'm taking some of the resources and children's books that I've been using with her in tandem with some of the other research that I've done and what has worked for me, and putting that into a beginner's Hebrew booklet. So it'll be the same general content, kind of like Jeff Benner's Learn Biblical Hebrew, but the stuff in there that I didn't think worked for me, I'm going to take out, and the stuff that I picked up other places that didn't work, I'm throwing that out, and I'm going to put together something that's literally something you can learn with your children or by yourself and be able to understand and read Scripture.
That's really good, because I was about to get those children's books and go at it.
Right?
The ones I saw the one that you did on YouTube, and I'm like, hey, I can learn it like that, okay?
Yeah.
So you're totally right.
Right.
Yeah. I want to know how I can get her Royal Roots t-shirt. I'm not the only
okay,
one.
Okay, so They're on. I actually am working on some new t-shirt designs too, but they're on. If you go to the website, I have like a shop button, and so there's like other t-shirts. So I've made like those t-shirts or t-shirts for kids, and I'm putting together some t-shirts called Find Your Tribe. So it has nothing to do with like tribes. Like we're not gonna Judah or this. But it's going to kind of have that theme of, like, you know, tribe vibes, vibe with your tribe. And so it'll kind of have that feel. So it's like I'm not going to identify anybody by any particular tribe, but it'll be something where people see it like, what do you mean find your tribe? Oh, holler at me, you know, let's talk. that's where those are going. So it's, I think the link, if you want the plain link, I think it's shop, S-H-O-P, and then HRR, so Her Royal Roots. And that t-shirt's on there, and there's a couple of other things that'll be on there as well.
Cool. Yeah. Because I've been wanting one for a long time. I remember when you first got yours, I was like, ooh, that's nice.
And I was trying to get them out, and the lady that I had initially kind of fell through. So I'm kind of glad that it did, because now I have, you know, another way to go about, you know, getting them out there, and it's actually easier. for me at this point. So the other book, you mentioned it. There's Anna's Ice Cream. Jazz wrote that, and it does like Hebrew counting and colors. So cute.
Yes, I saw that and on then, Amazon too.
I love it. I absolutely love it. And then if you haven't seen it, and I should be pushing it more, but I've been just kind of distracted and busy. Little Judah. Little Judah
in America.
I think Little Judah in America is my, in the least prideful way, it's my prized possession. I love that book.
It's cute.
I love it so much.
Did you review it?
I don't. Huh?
Did you review it on your YouTube channel?
I haven't because I had a copy. Let me tell you about I had a copy, and I ended up giving one to Jasmine. She gave it to her mom, and that was the first one. And then I ordered another one while I was in Atlanta, and I ended up giving that one to Lauryn Hill. So I don't have a copy of my own book, so I need to really get on that. I really do. So
yeah.
I will, as soon as I order a copy, I am going to read it on the YouTube channel and let people, get the experience of that book because I love it. I probably can do it on a PDF version if I can get it to work out on my computer, on my screen, and
yeah.
I'll put it up so that people can see it because when I tell you, I feel something about Hidden in Plain Sight. I feel like it's something that, for years from now will be something that people will pick up to better understand,
right.
Where we were coming from at the time. But Little Judah, I think if the kids don't catch it, nobody will. And so that book and the illustrations that Jazz did just brought everything about us to life. Like, it literally gives me chills. Like, it just really does.
I can hardly wait to see it.
I love it.
What it kind of does is kind of explains Hidden in Plain Sight for children. It's what it does.
Wow.
Kind of. You have a point.
I got it.
It's really...
I read it. I said, this is telling them about Hidden in Plain Sight. Yes, it does.
And you know what? You have a point. You really have a point because what sparked that book. Is my favorite. And if you want to share with people, because Deuteronomy 28 is good, and so is other stuff. But if you want to talk about a complete picture, it's Deuteronomy 32, hands down. And I read it a lot, like at least once a week, probably more if I think about it. And it gives you the whole picture,
Mm-hmm.
So, if you read Deuteronomy 32, you'll see why Little Judah was written the way it was. Yeah, pretty much told me, put Deuteronomy 32 into a book, please, and handle that. Because I had been complaining so much that it's a song that Moshe is supposed to teach the children of Israel and to all their generations, and nobody has taught it. And so Yah was like, what are you waiting for? Maybe you can't sing, but put in a children's book then. If you feel that passionately, do it. And I'm like, okay. All right, I got it. I'll do it.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, my goodness.
So, please.
So I'm just, go ahead.
No, I'm just saying, when you can, do that review, because I don't know. I'm feeling left out. Don't worry about me.
Oh.
Y'all just know what y'all talking about, but I don't have a clue. But no. Don't even. Don't feel bad or nothing that I don't know, but just kidding.
Goodness, no, I'm going to put it up. I need you to be in this, okay? I need
Seriously.
To be in this.
Yeah.
Last thing. I'm going to Israel.
Oh.
I'm going
yes,
March 31st.
Okay.
March 31st to the 14th, I believe. It'll be whatever 2 weeks is or something like that, like 13 days. And so I'm going to document the heck out of that trip. Like my girlfriend that's going with me literally hit me with the 5 weeks and I was like, oh no, it's too soon, but not soon enough at the same time. On the, that iron is in the fire.
Nice.
And I just want everyone to know I'm going to Israel and I'll be spending a few days in Egypt. So I'm going to do both. Because as a, I believe the Father has blessed me with the heart for both academia and spirituality. And I feel like to, in order to keep talking about something, I'm going to take the next step and silence all naysayers in the respect that if I'm going to keep talking about it, I'm going to go there so that I can say, I've seen this, and I've been to Sinai, and I've been here, and I've been here. So
Oh my word.
I feel like it's something for us as a people, and I feel like it's also something that Yah is going to allow me to see to better prepare us for that return that is, I think, very imminent.
Wow. I'm excited to okay, you have your extra batteries, you have your extra memory cards.
I need to get all that, like, I'm really, like, I got to be on that, but I've been slacking, but I've, and it's coming around faster than I thought. I'm like, once February is over, it's going to be on me, and
yeah.
So also, I'll get a chance to, because I Shannon knows. All of a sudden, I'm, like, very busy, and then everything is in my path. I don't know who's in Idaho. This is, like, a total sidebar thing. But if there are people in Idaho on my YouTube channel, like, find them who know me so that, like, we can do something in Idaho so I can, like, kill some birds with, like, you know, one stone.
Okay.
Do you know any people? I mean, Idaho is Idaho, I know, but, yeah. So, anyways, Yeah, so I'll
okay.
be doing more traveling. Go ahead.
I will tell you that I will be 2 hours closer to you, 2.5 hours closer to you within a month.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. So the drive for either one of us, we're going to have to make it happen, something. But, you know, we're going to
okay.
figure that out.
Okay, yes, we have to. We have to, have to, have to, have to. Like, seriously, in real life.
Right. Sorry, our listeners. We're talking as girls and friends like we're just on the phone. Sorry.
Right. We had a
person.
Yeah. Disregard that.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, awesome. I'm so glad we had you on. Thank you for taking out the time. Ahuva. Ima Huva
yeah.
is what I said. I'm a caller because you know we used to call her Mama Cheryl, but now I'm calling her Ima Huva.
Why does that sound so legit, though?
Yeah, I know. That's the reason why. Because I have another, because you know I call you guys my daughters and my bots and ya, and
uh-huh.
she always calls me Ima too, so. Well, most people who are awoke or who have awakened or however you want to say it, they do. So, yeah, might as well go with it. Do it too. Yeah. So, anyway, like Shannon was saying, it was a pleasure having you on, and I'm glad you were able to stay on longer than your time. Yeah.
Oh, me too, me too.
So excited, yeah. So, you know, we're going to have to, when you take your trip to Israel, we're going to have you come back and tell us all about
oh,
it.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to get
for
the good
sure.
on, too. Yeah.
Yeah, you definitely do, because, you know, he's a funny guy. A friend of mine calls him the driving prophet. It's hilarious.
Yeah. Oh. Ooh, yeah. Always
oh my
this,
God.
You know, telling it like it is. So
yes.
Exciting. Yeah.
But I'm going
to have to have him on.
So we'll be in touch.
Okay.
The newest project I'll be working on, and I want to come back and share that if you guys have time before I go to Israel, somewhere
sure.
like in the middle.
We'll make
church,
the time.
And it's called A Wise Woman Builds Her House. And pretty much I'm taking it. A Hebrew word study book, but I'm not going to do all the word studies you are, but I'm going to give all the tools
nice.
To do it.
Okay.
And so it's something that I definitely want to share, and I'll be sharing it on my YouTube channel, and I'll actually be doing lessons from the book leading up to the release of the book. so okay. that people can kind of see how it's supposed to work and kind of how the Father's placed it on my heart.
Nice.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward
cool.
to that.
That would be great. Yeah, me too. And so when you get ready to do that, you make sure you let all your YouTube listeners tell them to come and listen to Hey, Did You?
Yes. Yes, definitely. Thank you guys so much for having me. I love you both, and we will definitely be in touch. Sharon, if you want to know who that is, call at me.
I will.
Okay.
Love you, Shalom.
Okay. Shalom. That was awesome. Well, another awesome show.
I know.
And, did you want to say anything, Shannon, before we wrap it up?
I just want to say thanks to our listeners. Please tell your friends. Please share and tune in. Keep your eye open on Facebook. And I also wanted to talk about your YouTube channel also before we go, real quick.
Okay. Yeah, okay. My YouTube channel is Set Apart Living. I have different videos, but a lot of my videos are tutorials on how to, like, one I just did is how to make homemade butter, you know, and a lot of people enjoyed that one. And just different tutorials on kitchen gadgets and all that kind of stuff. I just tell people to go to Set Apart Living channel and just, you know, see the videos.
Yep, and you're kind of like that scripture that talks about the older women teach the younger women. I really like your YouTube channel and how you have that feel where we can just come and learn how to do things. You know how to do a lot.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. I find it interesting. I like doing it. I really enjoy it because now I put up one today for 2000 subscribers. I should have did it a couple of weeks ago because it's been up there for a while. I'm giving away as my 2,000 subscribers the book Hidden in Plain Sight. So if you guys are interested in want to get the book, you can go and subscribe. If you haven't subscribed already, make a comment, give it a thumbs up, and share the video. You know, that way when I get ready to do the drawing, you know, you'll be there. So yeah, go ahead and subscribe and all that. Leave me a comment and get your name in there so you could be in the drawing.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right.
And also, too, I forgot to tell the people in the video, the book is autographed.
it's
an autographed copy, yes. So
nice.
I'm excited about that. Uh-huh.
All right. You guys get on there and subscribe. All right.
Yeah, subscribe.
Sounds good.
Yeah. So I'm just thankful to be here and thank everyone for listening. And we'll see you guys next week. And I'm going to say shalom, shalom.
Shalom, shalom.
Make your who agree with me. Don't put the name together now. Make your who agree with me. Make your who agree with me. Don't put the name together.